Hello and welcome to episode 78 of Backflips and Nerds, where our ass is always in the jackpot. I'm your host, Tom Pringle. You can find us on Twitter at backflips_nerds. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/backflipsandnerds. And you can find us on our website, backflipsandnerds.com. We've got lots and lots of new writing, so please do go and check that out. There's no Darius or Ben tonight because we've got our roving reporter and the fourth most international member of this podcast is back. It's John McGee.
My ass just gives a shot. My ass is in the jackpot. Just give me a shot, Tommy. Just give me a shot, Tommy. Come on, Tommy. Just give me a shot, Tommy.
We're going to come onto that line later on because that's incredible. I can't believe what's happened this week.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. That was my favorite line. I don't think I was the only person who said that, but that just how forlorn he was about the whole thing. It's like, just give us a shot. Yeah, you were in the World Series about 2 months ago, Terry. Anyway,
I loved it. Right, we'll come back to that. So we're going to go into it and talk about your trip because you've just got back from Boston. So when did you get back on Monday, was it?
I got back on Tuesday morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I'm still a bit tired just because of the sort of re-acclimatizing to the right time zone. I didn't sleep overnight, unlike you, who's a past master at sleeping on planes. I'm not. And I was rudely interrupted by a very sweet and cherubic little girl who, yeah, she slept for a bit. That was when I was watching a film, and then she was wide awake when I wanted to sleep. But, you know, as John Jaser would say, such is life.
The problem is for me, though, when I'm sleeping on a plane, I probably shouldn't be sleeping because I should be working. I've definitely never fallen asleep on a helicopter over Iraq, but that's for another day.
Yeah, no comment. I can't. I my brother who works in a nuclear power plant also never falls asleep at work.
Is your brother Homer Simpson?
Yeah, basically from his job description, he is pretty much Homer Simpson. I will hasten to add he's far more intelligent than Homer. In case he's listening.
So give us a rundown of your trip then, because you were out there. Was it a week in total or was it a little bit less than that?
It was a week, just about a week in total, from rail to rail. So I flew out a week last Monday, so the Monday before last, and came back on Monday afternoon US time. So I spent a couple of days up in Manchester, New Hampshire, watching the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. So I saw two games there, which was an experience. I'm sure we can talk about that a bit more. Minor league baseball is very, very different to major league baseball. I'll tell you a bit about that. And then I was in Boston for, 6 days, 5 nights. And I saw 4 Red Sox games. I very nearly saw 5. Literally only not having enough cash in my wallet to pay a ticket tout stopped me going to a 5th one. I was on Lansdowne Street ready to give the man some money, and I just didn't quite have enough, and he wasn't knocking off an extra $10. I went to 4 games, 2 against the Tigers and 2 against the White Sox. A bit of a mixed bag in terms of results, but some really fun experiences that we can talk through. All of the games are really different. I got a really different experience of baseball at every single game. I sat in a different place, and that was really good fun. Yeah, so there was some interesting stuff. So I went on Pride Night, which I didn't know that I was doing, which was brilliant, like really, really enjoyable. The Red Sox lost that night, but I actually really enjoyed the game. I thought the atmosphere was really positive and so on. So yeah, it was good. I got to see all of my favorites, Joe Kelly, Craig Kimbrell, Jackie Bradley. Yeah, it was good.
Jackie Bradley hitting a dinger as well.
Yeah, I did. I was, I was on the verge of tears when Jackie Bradley hit a home run. I think the only thing that stopped the tears coming out of my eyes was that I was stood next to a rather gruff New Englander who outed himself as a baseball umpire earlier on and spent a good half an hour explaining the infield fly rule to me after a sort of slightly offhanded comment. Like, he realized I was English. He's like, oh, do you understand the rules? And I was like, I didn't want to say, yes, mate, I do. I'm one of the hosts of the biggest baseball podcast in the UK, because he'd have been like, you what, mate? So I was just like, oh yeah, I do, but I can't. Oh, the infield rat fly rule, ha ha ha, lol lol lol, that's quite hard. And I was like, oh, half an hour later, it's just like, why did I say that? So yeah, I didn't cry basically because I thought that man wouldn't approve. But I was nearly, I was very close. Yeah, seeing the big man hitting a home run was quite the thing. Yeah, I changed my Twitter header to a picture of the Jumbotron with Bradley Jr. that came up when he hit the home run. I tried to get you one of when Benintendi did it as well, but unfortunately, I was, well refreshed that evening. So I didn't get my camera out in time.
We'll get into that later because I definitely want to talk about your hangover the next day because it sounded like an epic one.
Advil.
If people don't know, John is literally obsessed with JBJ. He is his guy. You can't say anything bad about him. I mean, Joe Kelly's up there, but it's definitely JBJ is the boy. Let's get on to New Hampshire Fisher Cats then. So we didn't quite talk about my experience in minor league baseball. So I went to go and see the Buies Creek Astros, who are a high A team, unsurprisingly for the Astros. They play at somewhere called Campbell University, which is a Christian university, and therefore they don't sell any beer. So it was a half an hour drive to get there. We watched about 8 innings and then left. I mean, it's a beautiful ballpark, as you'd expect for a university, and the people there were great. It was just a little bit quiet, which was quite nice because at least we sat and watched baseball. So how was your experience then with the AA affiliate of the Blue Jays then?
So it was a bit of a mixed bag. So I think the first thing to say is, and apologies in advance to anybody listening to this in Manchester, New Hampshire, but your town is crap. It doesn't really hold a candle to the one that I live in. It's really quiet and sleepy. It's actually quite a pretty place in terms of the housing and stuff. But I think it's one of those cities, like large-ish cities in America, that there's not really a lot there in terms of economy. There's just a lot of housing and a couple of universities. So like the commercial center was essentially one street, which I just like, you know, like the Wild West. I was just like, I can't believe that this is like a real, and it was called Elm Street as well, which was, I thought was pretty funny. It's like, you'd think they would have changed the name of that street after the film series. Anyway, that's by the by. The ballpark is actually really nice. The river in Manchester is really pretty, the Merrimack River, and the ballpark is right on the river. It's called the Northeast Delta Dental Stadium, which has got to be like the most minor league sports name for a ballpark that there is going. So I went to 2 games, as I said. So the first one, which was on the Tuesday evening, was it had rained all day, like seriously, like howitzer gales and like steady rain for about 3 to 4 hours. And I was thinking, oh my God, I've literally brought like Manchester weather with me. Like it's what it's normally like here. I thought it would probably be on because I know that they do tend to go above and beyond to try and get games on. So I went down to the stadium and I'd arranged with their press guys to be able to be in the press box, which was really kind of them. And when I got there, I sat in reception waiting for the press guy, Tyler Murray, to turn up and meet me. And I kid you not, there was in the 10 minutes that I was in there, the guy on reception answered 14 phone calls of people asking whether the game was going to be on because of the rain. And it had stopped raining by then. But he was like, no one believes me that it's not raining. Anyway, so that's kind of like that was the start of it, and it got even weirder. So that game, there was hardly anybody there because no one believed that there was bad weather. Apparently they'd sold out, but there was only about 500 people there. So you know, like you, it was quiet and it was really cold, actually, like unseasonably cold. So it was a really odd atmosphere to the game. The day after was a bit like your experience in that it was a 10:30 in the morning game. And I didn't realize, but the reason it was at 10:30 in the morning was it was like a school special game. So it was like free tickets for kids. And they weren't serving any beer at that, unsurprisingly, because, you know, everyone was 12, apart from myself and Gabriel Fiddler from Extra Innings, who's working over in the States at the moment because his parents live out there. So, yeah, Gabriel joined me for both of the games. It was really, really good to have his company. He knew rather more about some of the players than I did. Yeah, it was fun. It's just, I don't know what your impression of it was, but what I took away was, you know, you hear this, that it really is a development league for players, and you kind of wonder what that means. But having seen it live, like, you can see, I mean, there's some really good players in both of those teams. The Fisher Cats have got, obviously, two of the best prospects in baseball, but the Akron Rubber Ducks, who they're playing, they had one or two good players as well. No one was really trying. Like, honestly, they just didn't, they just weren't, they were just playing at sort of 65, 70%. And I was contrasting it to, like, similar level in British sports. So League One or League Two football, where it's like blood and thunder stuff. Yeah, like, but so Bo Bichette, who's obviously not the best prospect on that team, but, you know, one of the best prospects in baseball, he's just so lackadaisical. He just looked like he didn't care. Like, he just wasn't even trying to get balls. And when he was at the, you know, when he was at the plate, he just can't really be bothered with this. But then again, you know, they did basically play two full games of baseball within just over 12 hours. And rather them than me, to be honest. Yeah. So yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. But I think, yeah, it was more different to Major League Baseball than I anticipated.
Yeah, having not experienced Major League Baseball, I'm not too sure yet, so I can't really comment on that. But the minor league side, I don't know, maybe because I was watching High A, where it's usually younger kids, I think maybe it was more they were desperate for it. The pitching I saw on display in High A was kind of, it was fast and it was good, but the control just wasn't quite there, especially for the relievers. They were just all over the shop.
Oh, yeah.
The hitters, I don't know. They seemed quite disciplined to me. They didn't seem that bad. But it was more the pitchers for me that I was surprised at. I thought there'd be some better relievers down there, but they're just not very good. I mean, they can sort of throw 90, 95, but that's about it. You don't know where it's going.
The relievers were uniformly terrible, but one or two of the starters weren't much better. There was the starter on the first day for the Fisher Cats, he'd just come up from High A, actually. He's a guy called Justin Dillon, and he was really poor. I mean, they lost 13-3, and it was nearly all on him. He was wretched. He was people all over the place. The second day, the guy he pitched for Akron was a Taiwanese guy called Xiao Xing Ching. Gabriel, I hope you're not listening to that, because I've just completely butchered that, and you taught me how to say that. He's just been called up to AAA, and he looked good, actually. So that wasn't really a surprise. He was a bit older, so he was 24, because he's had a TJ. He looked like a good pitcher, but the pitching I thought was poor. I mean, I thought Vlad Guerrero, unsurprisingly, looked brilliant, looked a complete class above. But the others, like Kevin Biggio, the other kid, Bichette. I just was like, these are the best prospects in baseball. Maybe I just haven't seen what that's relative to. So, you know, it was a bit of a lesson for me there.
When I spoke to the guy that hosted me down at Beavers Creek, a guy called Ricky Ray, he was saying that, I said to him, you know, is it completely obvious when a star is there? He goes, oh yeah, they're just a completely different class. And he said, a lot of the times you do see them just relax quite a lot because they know they're going to get there. It's just a matter of time for them. So they just take it easy. There's no real push for them. He said, it's the guys that, you know, are sort of fringe guys about going up. They're the ones that are driving. They're the ones that are there early. They're the ones that are taking BP early because they're desperate to get that next level. And that's all they want to do.
Yeah. I think that's probably right. I mean, I wrote a piece about going a long way to watch Vlad Guerrero play, which was true. I mean, I went to New Hampshire as much because he was there as anything else. There were other options. I knew I wanted to go to minor league games, but I could have gone to other places, and I went to watch him. He was just a class apart. Like, he could just, the way he carried himself, it wasn't like he didn't care. Like, Bichette, I just got the impression he was just like, I'm better than this. I don't need to be here, which, you know, having spent 2 days in Manchester, I can sort of empathize with. But Guerrero, it was different. Like, he just had that attitude about him. Like, it's not, I'm better than this, but like, I'm good enough to be not here. If that makes, there's a subtle difference. Yeah, there was no arrogance within the way he carried himself. He didn't hit any home runs, unfortunately, but, you know, I think basically the only thing that stopped him doing so was the weather. Like, there was a couple of balls that like sounded like, as soon as they hit the bat, that's a home run. And it just sort of like hung in the cold, wet air and just came back down. So the only home run in that game was hit by Sick Narf Loopstock, who's got the best name in minor league baseball.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, so for those who haven't read my article or not aware of SickNav Loopstock, the Aruban SickNav Loopstock, so qualifies for the Kingdom of the Netherlands, as they're called in baseball. So SickNav is the same as Nomar in that it's a backwards spelling of his father's name, but only Ramon and Nomar is sort of understandable, whereas Francis and SickNav, well...
That'd be so disappointing for me to be Mott.
Mott.
Mott Pringle.
Mott Pringle, yeah. Nodge would be mine. Nodge is arguably worse than SickNav. I don't know, though. Gabriel pointed that out to me, and he was like, "Sick." I was like, that is the stupidest name I've ever seen. And then he explained it to me. I was like, well, that just makes it worse.
I was about to say, I'm glad you didn't say, well, it makes a bit more sense. No, that makes it worse. That's terrible.
That was fun.
Did you get to touch Vlad?
I did not get to touch Vlad, unfortunately. He, as I explained in the article, I spent a rather grimy half hour in the underbelly of baseball fandom after the game. So Gabriel, who of course has appeared on this podcast several times, is well known to the majority of our listeners and is a really, really good guy. He likes a prospect autograph, and he doesn't hide this. But he said to me, like, I'm going to go and I'm going to get some autographs. You should come. I think you'll find it really interesting to see the types of people who do this. And, you know, I'm not one for poking fun at people who are on the margins and the fringes of society. But let's just say that some of those people were. Let's just leave it at that. And I'm not talking about Gabriel, in case anyone's making any assumptions. There were some interesting characters there, but, you know, Lord bless him. And it sounded like they were there every day from talking to them. That, you know, you'd think that how many Bo Bichette cards, honestly, do you need to get signed? And I mean, he's going to be a brilliant major league player. How many cards do you need to get signed by, you know, Connor Paynes or some random Kai Tom, the Hawaiian outfielder for the Akron Rubber Ducks? So, yeah, I spent an interesting half an hour there. And Vlad was, unsurprisingly, the last person to leave the clubhouse and walked straight into his SUV, which was being fired up by a couple of middle-aged Dominicanas. Sadly, not Vlad Sr., but some chaperones. The door was literally opened by the attendant Juan Kelly, who himself is a Fisher Cats player. And Vlad just stepped in and walked on and just went off. He waved, which in some respects made it better and in some respects made it worse. It's like, you've acknowledged our presence.
He just shinned us off.
So Bo Bichette, we were told, rarely signs autographs, but he did because a guy asked him for a selfie, and I think I don't know why, but he just sort of nodded, and it was the most perfunctory, like, oh, if I must. And then it took this guy ages to take this selfie. And this other kid goes, oh, that was a bit difficult. He goes, I'm not going to lie, it was rough. So anyway, he signed I had a Fishcats ball, and he signed it for me. I didn't tell him that I thought he'd been crap. I didn't really think it was the time or the place. And he signed signed a card for Gabriel, and I'm not lying, literally threw his pen back at him. Nice lad.
Wow. So they're getting ready for stardom, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, contrast that to what I saw in Boston, where, you know, not everyone signed and stopped for photos or autographs, but some of the players were really good. So Miguel Cabrera was going out of his way to sign autographs and get photos with the kids who were shouting. He wasn't the only one, but, you know, someone of his stature was taking his time out to do it. And I contrasted that with Bo Bichette and just thought, you've got something to learn, which, given who your father is a bit of a shame, really.
Yeah, so let's move on to Boston then. So what was your first game? Who was pitching? What was the result?
Can't really remember because I was drunk. Way, lads. no, I can't. I saw Eduardo Rodriguez pitch against some Detroit Tigers jobber. I genuinely can't remember who it was. I should probably look that up. But
Let me do it. You keep talking.
The Tigers rotation is absolutely awful. And I saw two pitchers pitch who I'd never heard of. I genuinely never heard of them before. And they were both rubbish. Boston only won one of the games. So yeah, I saw Eduardo Rodriguez, who obviously pitched under six innings, but still looked good in the process. And I was in the bleachers at that game with our friend Blake Finney of this parish and Jake Devereaux, who presents the Red Seat, which is the Red Sox Over the Monster blog, their podcast. He came out to the game with me, and we went to the famous baseball tavern on Boylston Street for a drink before the game. And I don't know what it was that I was bought, but I think it might have been quite strong. Because before the game had even started, I felt pretty jolly. And that was Benintendi bobblehead night. And we got in, because we'd been in the pub, all the bobbleheads had gone by the time we arrived. So it wasn't an excellent start. The Red Sox won the game 7-1. It was the Detroit Tigers are honestly one of the worst baseball teams I've ever seen. They look like they can't hit a lick. Their pitching is absolutely awful. And when I looked up and down their 25-man roster, I was just thinking, who the heck are these guys going to trade? I've got no idea. Like, where are they going to get anything for their fight? I think Nick Castellanos is the only player who's any good for them. He played in right field, and let's just say he is not a right fielder. At one point, like, he literally dropped a lollipop, like, right on, like, he was really lucky that he didn't drop it over the wall for a home run, but it bounced over the wall for a ground rule double. So, yeah, he can hit it, but he can't field whatsoever. So, the Tigers are awful.
Yeah, so yeah. Nick Castellanos, I was calling for him to move to the Red Sox year before, I think it was.
And they got Nunez instead, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. And it was Jed, who we're going to mention later, just have a look at his defensive stats first before you say that. When I looked at it, oh my God, he was terrible at third base. So yeah,
well, he's not good in right field either.
He's bad at right field. So the pitcher that Eduardo Rodriguez went against was, of course, Blaine Hardy. That's his official name. And look at that lovely
Blaine
mustache.
Hardy. Yeah,
look at that lovely mustache he's got as well. I'm showing you.
Yeah, that's not good. He wasn't good. So Andrew Benintendi hit a three run home run. Obviously, knew that we hadn't been able to get his bobblehead and was compensating for us. And then the highlight of the night was when your boy, Christian Vasquez, hit a home run. And you know who it was off, don't you? Buck Farmer. the best named reliever in baseball, who you've written a whole article about. And of course, I was at the toilet, so I didn't see it because I'd had several beers by that point. I don't know what was better, me completely missing that or me seeing it and having to sit through it and see you be smug about it. I was quite glad that I missed it in a way. But yeah, so the Red Sox won the first game 7-1.
So the next day you're incredibly hungover after your fun night, and then you really watch Jalen Beeks.
Yeah, so, well, I had sort of stuff in between, but I very rarely have hangovers because I don't drink very much. I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before. I think it was, I hadn't had a great deal, like five or six beers, and people who've been to the States will know that the beers there are smaller, like they're 2/3 of a pint. So anyway, I felt absolutely awful, look at me, I'm a lad, I had a hangover. But I was supposed to be interviewing someone and I felt so bad in the morning that I nearly cancelled it. I genuinely had to force myself to go. I thought I was going to be sick. I was walking around Stop and Shop in Jackson Square in South Boston just thinking, please don't be sick on the floor in here. Anyway, I wasn't. And a bottle of Pepsi and a six Advils and a big bottle of, like, a full 2-liter bottle of water later. Hadn't been to the toilet because it just was awful. I had to do an interview and I went to the wrong place.
You were like seriously shining this day. This was a great day for you. I bet you had the fears. I bet you had the cold sweats. You were just swallowing constantly. You were hungry. You were not hungry. You were sick. These are all the things that I experienced on Friday as well.
Yeah, all of those. And I was thinking, I haven't written any questions for this interview. I've literally never met this person before in my life. I've gone to the wrong place. Which sort of wasn't my fault because the instructions I was given weren't brilliant. I was told to go to a pavement, a cafe called Pavement, which is near Fenway Park. And I went to a cafe called Pavement from which you can literally see Fenway Park. Transpires this one even closer to Fenway Park. So, you know, it wasn't totally my fault, but I had gone to the wrong place. Anyway, transpires that we've already put the podcast out of that interview with Evan Drellick. He was probably one of the nicest people I've ever met. He was really kind. He went out of his way to come and meet me. He bought me coffee, which was because he'd sent me to the wrong place, not because I looked hungover, although I explained to him that I was incredibly hungover and it was very welcome. He then treated me kindly and gently and was not his usual cutting self. So that was fun. Yeah, and then I went to see the Red Sox play the Tigers again that evening, and I saw Jalen Beeks make his first start. It didn't go very well, and I made some commentary about that on Twitter, which apparently, as someone who's never played professional baseball, I shouldn't be doing.
How dare you? I can't believe you mentioned it. Why are you talking about whether fastball's a hitball or not? You should know better. Never, ever comment on anything unless you've experienced it.
What better authority than me? Well, maybe Jalen Beeks, who was saying he was putting his fastball in a place that made it hittable and had his pitch mix all wrong. So, you know, maybe I do know something about baseball. Maybe having watched like literally hundreds of games of baseball teaches you something about watching a game. Who would have thought it? I mean, I don't claim to be the world authority on this sport, but, you know, I claim to know a little bit. Anyway, so yeah, that was fun. That was Pride Night. So this is something that they don't really do in football over here. They wear the rainbow laces and stuff, and there's bits and pieces with Stonewall, but it was Boston Pride whilst I was there, which I didn't realize it was just a complete coincidence. But I thought what they did was incredibly positive, like really embracing it. So they flew the rainbow flag from the flag tower on the top of Fenway Park. They had the Red Sox that they have on the mound. They had them in the rainbow colours, which caused a bit of uproar, which I thought was ridiculous. They had the Boston Gay Men's Chorus sang the national anthem, which was absolutely incredible. They were amazing and like even gave me goosebumps as a not an American. I was almost singing along. It was the only time in the whole time. I was like, I don't know the words, but, you know, put them on the big screen just in case. You don't know. Donald Trump should have gone, given that he doesn't know the words. So it was brilliant. The only thing that was a shame that night was that Jalen Beeks lost. I mean, the other positive of that night was where I sat in Grandstand 32, which is in left field, is actually the family area. So it was completely dry. So I had a hangover and they obviously knew. I couldn't even have a beer if I wanted one.
Unfortunately, Jalen Beeks didn't do that well. But then clearly the next night was going to be great because you were going to see Chris Sale pitch against the White Sox.
Oh, God. Yeah. That was the night where I had half an hour of infield fly man as well. So I was just like, mate, like I'm watching Chris Sale and he's like dealing here. It's like watching peak era Pedro. And I'm listening to you chuntering on about the infield fly rule. Anyway, so yeah, Chris Sale was absolutely amazing. He pitched for 8 innings. Gave up about 3 hits. Like you could tell from inning one, it's just like no one's going to hit him. Like the only way anyone's going to get the ball into the field is off the end of the bat. And basically, I think he gave up about 3 hits the whole game, and they were all like really shitty little flares into left field or like C&I singles up the middle. He was unbelievable. Like that was the night he threw 100 miles an hour, and he gave up one run on a like one of those flares, a steal. And a pass ball and a sack fly, basically. It was so, and the Red Sox didn't score a run. I mean, Dylan Covey, who pitched that night, who I didn't realize, he was drafted one place before Sale in the draft, but he didn't sign. He went to college, but then has had a really rocky path to the bigs. He hasn't got to the bigs really until this year and stuck, but he's been really good for the last few weeks, and he was really excellent that night. Like, again, it's a weird one, like being in the stadium and being at the side, because you can't really see. It's not like watching it on the TV where you can see exactly where the pitch is going, but you can still see when a pitch is pitching well. Like, you could tell Beeks was just throwing it in the middle of the zone. Totally see that why people were hitting it. Whereas you could see Covey, like no one had balance at all. He looked really good. But yeah, so I saw Chris Sale lose 1-0 despite his best pitching line of the year, which is just typical, isn't it? But it was still amazing to watch him. Like, I saw some good pitchers that week. So I saw, you know, I saw Rodriguez, I saw David Price, I saw Kimbrel, Joe Kelly, and so on. But he's just on a different plane, completely different plane. It's unbelievable to see him. And that thing he does when he's struck someone out and he turns around and he just sort of looks around and sort of like cricks his neck, it's just terrifying.
Just all the boy, isn't he? I mean, you look back at what we've traded away, and you've got Kopech, who's now struggling at the White Sox. He's given away walks like Henry Owens. And then you've got Moncada, not exactly lighting the world on fire. I'm still pretty happy with that trade. And I was happy with it at the time as well, because, you know, as I say, flags fly forever, don't they? And it's prospect. Pennants are better than prospects.
Yeah, well, Moncada. So I saw Moncada play, and I mean, I know he's only young, but he looks raw. Goodness me. He doesn't look like he knows where the ball's going a lot of the time.
Yeah, he's had that little flash, hasn't he, this season? Mm-hmm. But he's definitely cooled off a bit. And in fact, that night, I'm just having a look now at the box score. He had 3 strikeouts.
Yeah.
Before we get loads of corrections, it was Covey who gave up 3 runs. So it was 3 runs, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts for him. Sale gave up 6. Sorry, 3 hits, not 3 runs. Sale gave up 6 hits, and it was 1 run, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. Like,
yeah,
that's bonkers. I mean, you consider this offense and how good it's been, you'd expect so much more that night.
Yeah, well, that I mean, it was a bit of a weird week to see them, because obviously Mookie Betts didn't play. JD Martinez was in and out of the team with a back strain. So on 2 nights, I saw Blake Swihart playing right field. On another, I saw Sam Travis playing left field. It's like, what the heck is this? I saw Christian Vasquez DH. What? Nobody wants to see that. But I did see Blake Swihart catch, which you know, is like... it's like catching lightning in a bottle, that.
Yeah, that's good. So your final game then was another White Sox game. It was David Price pitching, as you said. Yep. But you had a little treat before the game, I believe.
Yeah, so I got to go on the field for batting practice, courtesy of the Boston Red Sox, and with thanks and a nod to the aforementioned Evan Drellick for helping out with that. I rather ham-fistedly emailed the Red Sox media department at a completely guest email address. Then Evan said to me, "Are you doing anything with them this week? You should say hi. I'll put in a word for you." And he did. And it transpired that the reason that I hadn't had a response was not that they were rude, but because I'd had a bounce back into my spam email. So anyway, supplied with the correct email addresses, I had to, was given a pass to go on the field for batting practice, and I very nearly got to speak to Jackie Bradley Jr., but completely bottled it. I was, I think, slightly overwhelmed by the possibility. And the guy he was talking to was his friend from college. I could hear that they were college friends. And I thought, you know what? It really isn't the time for me to be butting in going, "All right, mate, I'm from Cumbria and you're my favourite."
"I love you, JBJ."
"Am I all right, lad?" But yeah, that was awesome. So I saw Martinez. It's really interesting watching him. This is where it gets quite dull, inside baseball type thing. He was talking to everyone. Like, when they were coming out of the cage, they were like going to Tim Hyers and Cora and Martinez, and he was going, "You do this, do that, you know, move your foot here, move your arm there." He really is, like, you can tell sort of in a sort of quiet, studied way, he's definitely a leader on that team from that point of view. So that was really cool to see.
That's really interesting, actually, because Mike Shipley brought that up in the AL East round table. He was saying, "Do you think Martinez has made much of a difference in that dressing room?" And I was like, "Well, I'm not sure. You know, he's an experienced guy. He's gone in there. Dustin Pedroia is meant to be quite a quiet guy anyway. He's not really sort of that leader type. Everyone was sort of forcing him into that when Ortiz went. So I'm not too sure of that." But it's really interesting to hear, actually, that he was the guy who stood outside the cage and talking to everybody.
I'll tell you what, the other one. So obviously I didn't see Betts this time. So he didn't play at all. The only time I saw Betts was when he was getting a commemorative ring for bowling 300 in the world bowling. The only time I saw him for the whole week, which is completely weird. That was before one of the games. So yeah, I was saying the other guy who looked like a leader was Xander Bogaerts, which I thought was awesome too. Like on the field, when there was like mound visits or anything, he was the guy that was in there. He was like talking to Sam Travis and Blake Swihart, who were obviously like the, even though they're not younger than him, they're the more inexperienced guys. And when Beeks was struggling, he was the guy getting the arm around him after the innings and stuff, which was, I thought was really great. Like he's still like a young player. He's like mid 20s. It was fun. So yeah, batting practice was fun. I was in the stadium for White Sox batting practice, nice and early. Got myself a nice Zach Hampel spot. Managed to get a batting practice ball from Tim Anderson, which was sort of in classic Tim Anderson style, sliced into the stands. Would have only been a single if it had been fair, mate.
So did Zach not push you out the way to get that one?
Well, he hadn't been allowed in at that point. I had a pass and he didn't. It was literally only me in the stand, so no one could push me out of the way because I was the only person there. So
did it go straight to you?
Or no, did it? Heck, it was miles away from me, but I was literally the only person in the right field stand.
Did you run, or did you do that British thing of like, you know, when a bus is about to pull away and nobody's British, when they're British, they'll never run after a bus is about to pull away. They'll just casually walk and look at the watch or something. Mm. When the ball went into the stands, did you sort of casually walk over or did you run straight after?
Oh yeah, massively. I casually walked over because I saw it where it had gone. I saw it had gone into like section 11 and I was sort of sitting along in section 13. I casually walked over and then I couldn't find which aisle it was on. So I was going, it's here. Oh, and it took me about four rows. Oh yeah, there it is. Thank God for that. So I was like, some kid's going to turn up and I'm going to have to give it to them. And then I felt really guilty. I was sat in the stands next to this guy with two young kids, and he was saying to me that it was their first game, and I was sat there with this batting practice ball in my bag, and I just thought, I really should give it to these kids, but I'm not.
No, absolutely not.
Mind you, that said, where I was sitting, like it was in section 10, which is on in right field, but sort of halfway along, not quite on the first base side, just on the right field side. And just along from me, there was a couple sat there with a baby who I reckon was probably about 2 or 3 months old, like really, really tiny, like first Red Sox game type of thing. And a foul ball came right to us. And I could tell it wasn't coming for me, but I could tell it was going to go either in my row or the row behind me. I thought that's about 6 feet wide of me, you know, playing cricket. I've got an all right eye for where things are coming. And I thought, it literally, as soon as it started coming in our direction, I thought, that's going to hit that baby. Baby. And I went, hey. And literally they looked up just in time. It was literally going to hit the baby. And the guy caught it just in front of the baby.
Yes.
So he got the baby, the foul ball. And then like the woman was like sort of holding the foul ball up. And the guy stood up and started like doing like the beginning of The Lion King with the baby. Pumping it above his head with his foul ball. And the kids started crying. It was absolutely amazing. that was actually one of the highlights of the whole trip. Fuck the baseball.
My next question on this list in front of me is, what are your highlights of the trip then? Pick your top three.
It's going to be pretty random. So JBJ hitting the home run, obviously. Joe Kelly just being there. And then in joint third, it was the Boston gay men's chorus and the baby. getting simbered after the foul. being party as a close runner up, being party to the Manchester New Hampshire autographer scene.
I think that's going to stick with you forever. You text me pretty soon after that, and I enjoyed those texts. They were very interesting.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the babe. Well, I hadn't forgotten about it. I just knew that I hadn't told you guys about it because it was just. It was sort of hilarious and almost traumatic because they weren't looking and we were going, it's going to hit the baby. Because I think they were like eating a pizza or something. it all turned out fine, but here comes the pizza. Never, here comes the foul ball. It's going to literally kill your months old child. So that was a good game as well. So JD Martinez won that game with a home run. Basically, he hits lots of home runs. I saw Benintendi hit two home runs. I saw Martinez hit two home runs as well. And I saw JBJ. I did not see Christian Vasquez hit a home run, but he did hit one.
Well, you know, it's that whole thing that if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, did actually happen. So,
well, you better ask Jake and Blake. They'll vouch for the fact that it happened.
Were they not too half cut to understand what was happening?
Possibly. When I came back, Jake gave me a hug. So that can vouch for how much drinking he'd had.
That's quite interesting for a Bostonian to be doing that to people, giving people hugs. I like that. That's good.
Oh, yeah. Lots of high fives going on and hugging. Blake was a bit confused. He's just like, I don't even support this team, but he was getting involved.
So speaking of beers then, so what was your best ballpark beer? Do they have anything special? Because I know the Padres are very much like a craft beer thing. You can go to all different areas to get craft beer.
Yeah, so they don't really. They used to. It's interesting because I've been there before and they had quite a good selection of craft beers, but now they don't because they're sponsored by Sam Adams, which is itself a sort of notional craft brewery. So if it was just like Budweiser and some craft beers, but yeah, because it's Sam Adams, it's a bit like we're not a craft brewery, although they're like, all right. So I had a couple of these Sam Adams 1776, which Jake bought me, and I was like, is this a pointed reference to the fact that 1776 is the Declaration of Independence and you British person are going to drink this beer? And it made me feel terrible. So maybe that's why. It's got like a sort of poison in it for British people.
Worked perfectly. Worked perfectly.
The best beer that I had in any places of beer from Maine, and I can't remember what it was called, but it was really nice. That was in Manchester.
What about ballpark food? Did Boston do anything special? Because I know you get ones where it's got like a pizza inside a hot dog or something.
Yeah, they do stuff like that. So I had some Cracker Jacks. So if the Absolute Bunts guys are listening, I had some Cracker Jacks, and it's basically popcorn with lots of caramel on it and basically bits of crisps, as far as I can tell. It's a bit weird. Yeah, I had some of that, but yeah, they do stuff, but I was just sort of sticking to the basic pizza, to be honest, mate. Soaks up the booze well, doesn't it? Yeah, they have the local pizza.
No, it doesn't for you.
No, mate. They have the local pizza, which is called Regina or Regina Pizza. That's quite nice, actually, as it goes. So yeah, I had quite a lot of that. And a Fenway Frank, which is a six dollar burglary, essentially.
Is it literally just one of those like Savoys in the BAP?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was just like, you know, that tastes a bit briny. It's like, oh, this tastes of sadness.
Where it's got like pig's trotters and anuses and eyelids in it, and that's it.
Yeah, I dread to think what was in that. I ate absolutely terribly. I came back and Zoe was like, "What do you want for your tea?" I was just like, "Vegetables."
Just feed. Whenever I do a steaks trip, I always have to do that. I come back and I'm like, Liz, can we just have a salad? I don't want anything else. She's like, you don't want meat? And I'm like, no, just give me
never again.
Veg. Just some sort of veg.
If I ever see pulled pork again, I might kill it.
Anything else from your Boston trip before we move on? Because we're running very late.
Yeah, we've run long. It's because I can talk for England, isn't it? I think that's it. That's enough of me gloating. It was really good fun. I had an awesome time. And if anyone listening hasn't been to see a game at Fenway Park, you really should. It's quite spectacular and magical, and they put an awful lot into it. Yeah, they play the Cheers theme tune before every game because Fenway Park is the place where everyone knows your name. And when the Red Sox are trailing in the ninth inning, they play Shipping Up to Boston, and Kimbrel's walkout is something in and of itself. Like, they have this match lighting on the screen and then it like burns and then there's flames coming out and then there's Kimbrel running on the big screen. It's just unbelievable, like really cheesy. And then they play Dirty Water, which is the Red Sox sort of theme song, if you will, when they win. It's kind of, I've never, you know, I haven't gone to many, many sports grounds across all different sports. I've never experienced anything like it in my life. And I know it's so much more going to more than one game in a week than just having been to the one previously. So, yeah, it's good. Everyone should go, even if you're not a Red Sox fan.
That's fantastic. I need to do it. My wife's currently saving up for her 40th, and it's the savings have begun, and they're putting a certain amount in a bank account, her and her friends, to build up to it, and there'll be loads of money in there for them to go and do something. I think I need to start and do the same and get a proper East Coast trip done where I just go on my own, no family, just me, so I can have fun on my own and just enjoy myself. Screw you, family. Yeah. Speaking of Kimbrel and his walkout with the match and the Flames and everything, the Padres used to do that with Brandon Mara, which is just hilarious because he is awful. And I think I literally just read then that his contract's been selected by the Royals, so he's going to play for them again.
Oh, wow.
So apart from the hot Brandon Mara news, we're going to move on to some other news that's happened this week. And it's not Ben Lindbergh just getting lynched on Twitter for mentioning that he doesn't like the DH anymore. It's not Miguel Cabrera going down for the rest of the season. It is a different Tigers man, and that's Jed, who's at Tigers JUK, who put a video out on Twitter the other day. They just said, "How have I never seen this audio with audio before?" And it's a video from May 2016. The video went wild. It's currently at 3.8 million views, but you can't get it anymore. We'll explain why in a second. If you haven't seen this, it's incredible. But it's had 45,000 retweets and 132,000 likes.
And that's just on Jed's account, because a lot of people just took the video and put it on their own as well.
Yeah, exactly. So you got like Baseball King and the other one where it's got like a picture of an old guy pitching on it, or whatever it is. And Bleacher Report reported it. Nessun reported it. Everyone grabbed it. Literally everybody grabbed it. And do you know what? It starts and it looks like a normal video, just a normal baseball video from behind the man, as you normally see. And it's Noah Syndergaard pitching to Chase Utley. And in only a few seconds in, you realize, oh, there's no commentary on this. This is weird. So what am I looking at here when he's talking about with audio before? So, yeah, you've got the crowd noise. Syndergaard throws his pitch. It's fastball, and it goes behind Utley by about 5 feet behind his head. And you go, oh, yeah, I recognize this now. And then you realize that there's talking. You can actually hear voices. And it turns out that the umpire, Tom Hallion, I think it is, was mic'd up. And you hear him say, "You're done," to Syndergaard. And it's like, what? And I've just thought, actually, have we sworn on this podcast yet? Because if we have, I'm about to swear. So just
yeah, we have sworn. It's okay. I swear.
Turn it down if the kids are about. Syndergaard replies, "For throwing a fucking fastball." And I was like, hey, what is going on here? And then all of a sudden you realize that the umpire's mic'd up and you can hear everything, absolutely everything going on there.
And then our ass is in the jackpot.
Yeah, that's where our ass is in the jackpot comes from. And Terry Collins is going wild and not getting his chance for making the throw at Utley for what Utley did to Ruben Tejada. He then starts blaming MLB, saying MLB did fuck all, and starts going crazy at the umpire. The umpire's there going, it's not our fault. We don't get a say in any of that. It's just incredible. And it was 2 minutes long. It was fascinating. I watched it about three or four times.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
This is brilliant. Unfortunately, MLB have since pulled the video. I'm pretty sure you can get it somewhere else, but I've done a rudimentary search and can't find it anywhere, because I just wish I'd saved it, because it's such a good video. But it turns out it should never have been seen by the public, as the recording of umpires and then subsequent release to the public is strictly against the CBA. John, initial thoughts on the video?
Well, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Like, I a lot of people have said that the MLB are a real killjoys for getting rid of it. You know, that the old maxim in sports, whenever anyone says nobody wants to see that, it's exactly the type of thing that you want to see. But at the same time, I did totally understand their point. Like, it really probably shouldn't have been seen by anyone, because it did compromise. I mean, the umpire came out of it really well, actually. I think a lot of people have made that point. It made Terry Collins look really stupid, and I actually kind of felt quite sad. I mean, I thought it was really funny. Like, don't get me wrong, it was really funny, but I said at the start there was like a great amount of pathos in that, like the way he was just saying, just give us a shot. I felt like it was like a sort of, it was like something out of The Office when it was good, you know, like Michael Scott could have been doing, just give me a shot. I just was like, oh my god, I felt terrible for him. I after the first watch, and just almost like stemming the tears flowing from my eyes. And so I do understand why they've taken it down, and I can't rag on them for being killjoys for it, really, particularly not if it's in the CBA. Yeah, as I said, the umpire comes out of it absolutely brilliantly. Tommy, good lad.
Come on, Tommy.
Just give him a shot. Oh, you
I'd quite like to get Liam on and hear his thoughts about it, to be honest, because him being a coach and him getting ejected during the World Baseball Classic as well, having chatted to him about that one, when he sort of was going and going and going, trying to protect his guy from getting chucked out. He then gets chucked out, and then he said to me, he just unleashed, because he's like, well, I've been thrown out now, I'm going to go for it. And I can't remember on the video if Terry gets chucked out. I'm assuming he does get
ejected. No, he doesn't. He doesn't get ejected. Right. He doesn't. No, he talks him down.
He's properly going for it, doesn't he?
He let him off. I think he could tell that it was emotionally charged. He didn't get ejected, unlike Sale earlier this week. I'm already going out of the game. You may as well eject me on the way out. Absolutely love that.
Well, I remember my dad saying to me, like, he never like said to me, you know, you should be gobbling off at referees playing football. You shouldn't be like doing high tackles or anything like that. But he said to me, if you're ever going to get red carded, make sure you get red carded for a very good reason. So if you're going to get ejected, make sure you get your most out of it. And that's exactly what Liam said to me. He's like, I've been ejected. I'm going to get the most out of it now and go for it.
So here you go. God's honest truth. Not a story that I've told on this podcast before. I it may not be true now, but at the time, I was the only person in the history of my school to be sent off for swearing.
Wow, that is impressive. Yeah. Is that a do you get like white line fever when you cross that line? You just go crazy.
Yeah, pretty much. Like I'd got yellow carded for like a really terrible tackle, and then basically later on in the game gave the referee a blue piece of my mind and was asked to leave the field. I had to go and explain myself to the headmaster. That was fun.
That's because you had to pay a fine. You probably went to quite a posh school, whereas I didn't. Well, like, the headmaster probably gave me a handshake for that. thing is, though, as much as I gobbed off at referees and other players, I don't think I ever got booked in my short 15-year football, junior football and senior football career, which is unsurprising.
I was one of only two people who ever got sent off playing junior football for my school. Although we did have a guy in my team, who I won't mention, just in case he's listening, who in the time of us playing, so across the 5 years through to year 11, scored a remarkable 7 own goals. and that was in the team. We were really good. Like, we usually won our league. I still, to this day, don't know how he did it. He once scored an overhead kick on goal. It's one of the best things I've ever seen from the edge of our box. He tried to clear it, and it hit him, hit his shin, and went over the goalie. Like over his head.
That's terrible.
I just really nearly said his name then. anyway, carry on. Our ass is in the jackpot.
The thing is, I've got a question now. So why are they recording umpires? This is quite interesting. I'm trying to work this out. Why are they doing
it? I think they're doing it because there's MLB and the umpires union just want to listen to how they cope with situations and then give them feedback and pointers on how they might handle difficult situations better. So I'm pretty sure that the reason that's on YouTube or something is because they use that clip to show, if you've got a crazy manager shouting in your face, do this.
Keep saying your ass is in the jackpot and just confuse the hell out of them. What does that even mean? Our ass is in a jackpot.
I have no idea, but it's genuinely one of the funniest combinations of words that I've ever seen.
I'm going to start using it at work. If someone says to me, they start stressing me out, I'm just going to go, come on, our ass is in a jackpot here. You can't do this.
Yeah, I could see you definitely using that in a military situation. Whether it's going to work in public sector consultancy, I'm not sure.
Well, the military have got weird words where it's words that are in the English dictionary, but nobody ever uses, like ablutions. Nobody ever uses that, but the signs everywhere on camp saying ablutions and an arrow pointing to them. Why? Who in the modern world uses the word ablutions?
My dad, but my dad is weird.
There we go. Should have been in the military. Should we do? In fact, no. What have I got here? So I've put in here, can we see this becoming common without going too deep into it? Because I'm very conscious of the time. I mean, the NFL do it and the NBA do it, but I think that's more of a record and then let the Players Association or the union look at it and then release afterwards.
Mm. I think if they get used to it, I think if they know this is going to be for public consumption, it might help temper some of the behaviour of someone like Terry Collins. So you could see, like, it's always said about rugby, isn't it? Oh yeah. You don't see rugby players disrespecting the ref because they get recorded and they call the referee, sir, whilst they're like stamping on each other's head and using fake blood. Stupid, sportful and knobheads. Anyway, Ben likes it. Other people like rugby. You're more than welcome to like rugby. Well done. But yeah, maybe it could be something like that where they could use it and it would promote better quality of behaviour. I don't know.
I've got on here which players you'd like to see mic'd up. We chatted about it briefly in the Slack chat. I think it's going to be first baseman, isn't it? Essentially, you want to hit mic'd up.
Joey Votto.
Yeah, Joey Votto. Do you know what? I'd like to see Max Scherzer mic'd up as well with his with that gif of him swearing to himself. It's just
brilliant.
Yeah, and of course, our podcast favourite, John Lackey. We want him mic'd up as well.
Oh, mate, fun. That's all he'd be saying.
Should we do some listener questions?
Yeah, we've got some good ones. We better get through them because I've just rattled on about, you know, I'm great. I had a really lovely time.
I hope people stuck with us because I find that thoroughly interesting and hopefully others will as well.
People
who are planning trips and things like that, maybe. Hopefully it'll be good. So just don't drink with Jake and Blake is what we're saying.
Yeah.
So Mike Ivory, he tweets us to say, we'll stick with the Red Sox theme apologies because John mentioned it's going to be a Red Sox love-off, which it's been. Do you think you will sign Machado, as in the Red Sox, do you think the Red Sox will sign Machado in the summer and do you want him? I'm going to answer that no and no. Go, John.
No, I don't think we will. Oh, God, that always does my head in when people say that about sports teams. I don't think the Red Sox will sign Machado. Nor do I think that he's necessary because he plays what position? Shortstop? the Red Sox have got a better defensive shortstop than him. Not a better offensive one, but a good enough one. And, Rafael Devers is a good shortstop. It's a good third baseman. They don't need him. Devers has had a bit of a slump, but he'll come back. If they're going to sign one big player, I would stick my neck out and say I think it'll be Bryce Harper because they could do with an upgrade in the outfield.
How the hell are they going to afford that though?
I don't think they will. I don't think they'll sign anyone. But if they're gonna blow the budget, it will be for Harper, not for Machado.
Yeah, true. Cool. So Rob Navarro mentions about he doesn't like untidiness of ballpark benches. It wasn't even a question. It was just him having a rant.
I agree. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'll tell you the other thing I don't like, and I hadn't really had a problem with it until recently, is players with like wads of tobacco in there. It just looks stupid. Like Chris, I realize Davis, it's an addiction, but you look, Chris Davis, yeah, JP Crawford, I know it's not a particularly, like it looked like he had a, you know, sore lip. Like an idiot.
And that's essentially what killed Tony Gwynn. So,
well, exactly. But, you know, I'm not moralizing here. I'm just saying you look like a tit.
Oh, I am. I'm moralizing. Another thing I don't like about untidy benches at ballparks is just untidiness at ballparks. So at Buies Creek, whilst chatting to Ricky Ray, stood just off the first baseline. There was a guy stood approximately 10 feet away from a bin and he was eating peanuts and just dropping the shells on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
And there was just a huge pile of peanuts at his feet. And I said to this guy, I said to Ricky, mate, is that normal? He goes, oh, yeah, someone will come up and clean that later. I'm like, the bin is there. It's right next to him. What is he doing? He's like, well, it's just the ballpark way. Okay, next question then comes from Stephen Pipe. He asks, how many games will the Orioles lose this season? I'll go for 102. That's him, by the way, not me.
Yeah, no, I saw Stephen's question. I think that's about right. They're absolutely horrendous. I mean, the stat that I couldn't believe that I saw earlier on today was that if... Chris Davis and Mike Trout continue at their current trajectories, they're going to finish 23.6 WAR apart from one another. Chris Davis at -5.3 and Mike Trout at plus 17.7. So offset 18.7. Ridiculous. I mean, Chris Davis has been unbelievably bad. What is this? He'd had 22 hits in 53 games or something. Unbelievable. God, he's got 4 years left on that deal.
But do you know what? I was listening to, I think Sleep on the Bus today, and it's quite an old episode. Well, I say old, it's probably about a week old. But they were talking about the fact that, what's going on there? There must be something wrong, you know. He's really struggling. It's got to be something else. His fly ball to home run ratios dropped right the way down. His fly ball ratios dropped right the way down. I was like, Do you know what? As you just said, he's getting paid for the next 4 years. He's on a shitty team playing shitty baseball. Why would he care? He's still going to get paid whether he gets cut or not. So he doesn't really care, does he? So will they lose 102 games? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think
Do you know what? As I sit on the AL East round table, it's sad. I don't like a division like that. I'd prefer it to be nice and tight. I prefer it to be quite close. Just having a whipping boy in there is pretty dull.
Absolutely.
Next one is from Glasgow Baseball, who asks, is the treatment of H. Ramirez justified?
That we are assuming is Hanley Ramirez. And I have to be honest with you, at the midpoint of last week, when I was watching Sam Travis and Blake Swihart and Christian Vasquez at DH, I did think, oh my goodness, why is Hanley not on this team? But I still, you know, I that was probably the day that I had the hangover. When I was more lucid, I think it is. I still think it was the right move for the club overall. I do miss Hanley. Obviously, I wrote about that. He was one of my favourite players and brought a huge amount of charisma to the Boston Red Sox clubhouse. I think it's bizarre that he hasn't found another club. He's obviously in that same Bermuda Triangle as Jonathan Papelbon.
Well, when Papelbon said, I'm going to decide soon, I've just got to pick between a few teams, and then we've never seen him since.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, still very popular in the old Red Sox jersey front is Papelbon. There were a lot of Papelbon jerseys and jerseys about, which I found a bit worrying. Yeah, it's sort of in rank order, like discounting Betts and Benintendi, who are quite clearly the most popular of the current players, and in that order. Although still definitely more number 34 jerseys than there were either of those two, unsurprising. Yeah. You've then got Pedro, Ted Williams, Jason Varitek, Papelbon in that order in terms of jerseys that you see at Fenway Park. Papelbon wears number 56, so for a while I thought people were wearing Joe Kelly jerseys. But,
I'm surprised not to see Pedroia on there. Hanley.
See quite a lot of Pedroia, yeah.
Treatment of Hanley, yeah, justified. I think, like you say, it was unfortunate that Pedroia went straight back down into the DL and Betts getting in the DL as well. So I think at the time is the right decision. And do you know what? It was unfortunate that those moves happened. If they hadn't done it, when Pedroia went down and Betts went down, they'd held on to him. By the time Pedroia got back, I think they would have binned him straight away. So that vesting option was always looming, so they wanted to get rid of him. Where are we next then? Russell Eason asks, this is a great question. Fangraphs prediction, has Cubs been the best NL team by the end of the season with 92 wins? Do you think all five AL postseason teams will have better records than everyone in the NL? I'll go first and say that just looking at the list of teams, I think we've got at least the Yankees or Red Sox. And do you know what? I'm going to say both. I'm going to put my neck out and say both will have more than 92 wins. And then the Astros are going to be up there as well. I think the Indians are a little bit too far behind. I know they can go on a decent run like they did last year. I say decent, an incredible run like they did last year. And bump that number up. But I think they're the sort of three that I reckon are definitely up there. I wouldn't say all five, though.
No, I don't think so. I still think the Brewers will have more wins than the Cubs this year. I think the Brewers are going to win that division. I think three as well. The Mariners are obviously absolutely brilliant at the moment, and I really hope they keep it up whilst losing to the Red Sox this week. I don't think the Indians are going to get enough. I think the AL Central is just rubbish and weird.
Yeah, I think that really sums it up. In fact, did I miss a question about the Twins, or did we do that?
Yeah, about the Twins. Rob Navera asked whether the Twins are so bad in that league, which is, it's all relative. They've just been a bit weird this year, haven't they? You know, they just haven't progressed. So Buxton and Sano and Eddie Rosario has been really good, hasn't he? But apart from him, they've just not had production from anywhere. And their problem is the same one as it was before. They've got no pitchers. I mean, who is their starting rotation? It's Jose Berrios and just nobody else.
No, that's about it. And Sano getting sent down to, I think he's gone to high A as well. He's not even gone to like triple A. He's gone to high A. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I read an explanation of why he's gone to high A, because it's to do with his fielding that he's been sent down, and he's lost his stroke as well, apparently. And High A is in Fort Myers, which is where they have their instruction. It's their spring training venue. So that's why he's gone there. Right.
There we go. The international reporter strikes again. I do like Chris's question, who's eat_sleep_film about Bryce Harper, but I think that one's going to drag on a little bit. So what I want to do is make sure that we get Adam Perry's question in. Chris, we'll save yours for next week or next time.
And we talked a little bit about Bryce. I was going to mention Chris's question when we spoke about Bryce and say that I don't think he is overrated is the gist of it. But yeah, we should talk about Bryce another time because he's been absolutely rubbish for the last 6 weeks. So he's definitely talking about between us.
And the astute ones out there have probably seen the back and forth of Darius and I on Twitter about the bet that we've got about him and his home run, his total home runs at the end of the season. I think it probably needs a proper discussion about him. So we'll get Darius on and get him to talk about him more. So Adam Perry, going on the silly questions, which we absolutely love. He asks, if there was a backflips bench clearance, as in us, backflips and nerds, who would throw the first punch, who would play dirty, and who would try and be the peacemaker? Do you want to do one each? Should we do who would throw the first punch? What do you reckon, John?
I think Ben would throw the first punch because I think he's sneaky aggressive.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Rugby in it.
Yeah, I think Ben's going to do the first punch. He's a young lad as well, so he's probably got a decent swing on him.
Yeah, he's got to jump on all us old gits.
Yeah, definitely. Who would play dirty?
You.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have the speed. I don't have the power. I don't have the nounce to actually fight, so I would play as dirty as possible. I'd be like going for the back of the knees and pulling hair and things like that. And who's going to be our peacemaker? It's got to be Darius, hasn't it?
Yeah, and me resolutely in the Buster Posey role. Just stood at the side wanting absolutely nothing to do with it. See me at school. Oh, there's a fight. Yeah, I'm just going to go over here.
stood arms down, just like, nah, not involved, not interested.
Yeah.
Did we have any more? I'm scrolling through quickly. I don't think we did we?
I think that was the last one. So we'll tackle Bryce next week.
Yeah, I think we should. It's an interesting topic, especially with him being in a contract year as well. His start, as all Bryce starts are, were pretty electric, but he's cooled off. I do want to mention though, and this is something that you just dropped in slightly on the podcast. Please go and look at Absolute Bunts and listen to them. They are absolutely brilliant. So it's two guys who are big football fans who've suddenly decided that they're going to start talking about baseball, and they're doing a podcast at the moment. So go and hunt them out on Twitter. It is hilarious. Like, as a baseball fan, you can listen to it, and it is great fun. And Darius told me off this week because whenever I listen to it, I just want to correct them and start pointing them towards things. And it's kind of like stealing content because they're doing pretty much a page of the rule book each podcast. And so far, it's been fantastic. John, have you managed to listen to these boys yet?
Yeah, I have. I listened to their first episode last week whilst I was in America, and I enjoyed it immensely. And I've started actually listening to the second one whilst I was on the way home today. So yeah, big props to what they're doing. Even if Henry has decided to be a Rays fan. We need to give him some abuse about, although the pictures of Rays either celebrating or commiserating post loss is enjoyable, and I think will continue to be enjoyable for a long, long time.
I just love it though, because it's almost like the journey that I seem to remember going through in about 2013, just watching baseball. It seems to be a very similar journey, and it's great fun. I love it. Any other business, John? Have you got anything else?
No, I haven't. Normal service will be resumed, I think, as of next week. So I've obviously been absent for quite a while, moving house, and then I was away. But I now have a house with furniture in it, albeit I don't currently have a desk, which is why I'm doing this. I've got a bit of a stiff neck from doing it on a coffee table. We'll have normal podcasts coming up as of next week. And obviously your divisional series will continue apace. Hopefully, I'm going to get to host a couple of those in due course.
Yeah, you can have the AL Central. It's fine. I'm out. I'm out for most of July, unfortunately. I'm away with work, which is really, really annoying. So you'll be not hearing from me for a while when it comes to July.
But, there you go, people. That's a reason to be tuning in during the month of July, if ever there was one. Oh, the last thing is that there's going to be another Brit Sox and Nerds podcast this week, which is another conversation with Jen McCaffrey from The Athletic, who I also met when I was out there. Jen has written a really good piece on the London series next year and spoke to Sam Kennedy of the Red Sox and Chris Park and Tony Petitti from MLB in New York, amongst many others. And it's a really interesting piece. And she talks through a lot of what they told her. I know not everyone has an Athletic subscription. So without asking Jen to basically dictate it, we went through a lot of it. So it'll be interesting for people to listen to if they're interested in MLB London series content and maybe haven't seen some of the more detailed stuff that Jen managed to eke out of her contacts.
Cool. Looking forward to that. I didn't know about that. So that's cool. Really looking forward to that one. Yeah. Speaking of London series, make sure you get into our account, follow, retweet the competition we got going for the New York Yankees hat as well. We need 3,000 followers so we can actually interview Phil Hughes, who's agreed to come onto the podcast, which is going to be brilliant if we can get it done. So, yeah, you can find us on Twitter at @batflips_nerds. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. And we got our website with plenty of new writers who are absolutely brilliant. And also beating MLB.com to writing content. I'm pretty sure they're stealing that content, but never mind. You can find us
at Batflips. Two articles from the brilliant Porrig Whelan, who has written two articles which have appeared on the same day on MLB.com.
That was weird. Like seeing those titles, like what the hell is going on? But it must be a coincidence. Clearly, they're not looking at our website and writing articles, but there we go. The website is batflipsandnerds.com. Please rate and review our podcast, subscribe, tell people about our podcast. John, where can people find you? Are you interested in people finding you and your new Jackie Bradley banner?
On the internet, you can find my Twitter linked from ours. Yeah, and I've written a couple of pieces about my trip, one about Vlad, which I really enjoyed writing. There's going to be one more coming about my time in Boston, which I'm hopefully going to get written over the weekend.
Sweet. You can find me on the Batflips and Nerds account as well. You can find my username there, which I was going to change, but fantasy expert Justin Mason has convinced me to keep it because he absolutely loves it. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time when hopefully we'll have a full house again. So see you. Bye.
Bye.